Hey folks, and welcome to This Week in Games, a podcast series from the fine people at Deconstructor of Fun. The concept, as you know, is pretty simple. Your hosts are Joseph Kim and myself, Mishka Katkov, and the goal of this podcast is to highlight and deconstruct a few of the most relevant news in games. Now, this episode is a little bit different. So all the topics that JK found this time around were around esports, and we decided to do an episode focusing purely on esports. Now, both JK and I are not expert in esports by any means. So I grabbed a guest, and I didn't look very, very hard for that guest, because what actually happens is I had that guest perfectly here at our house. And that guest is actually, I'm going to introduce that guest a little bit later in this episode. But anyways, truly enjoyed recording this episode. Truly enjoyed our guest and her insights. And as always, hit us up on Twitter to let us know which topics you want us to talk about next. Hit on the subscribe button, whatever podcasting platform you're using to hear us deconstruct the latest news in the future. And please let us know which guests you want us to bring on next time around as we're talking about these interesting topics. Anyways, enjoy it, folks. And we're live. That's it. Twig 9. How are you doing, all JK? Right.
Yeah. Good evening, I guess, on your side. And today, I think, is a special episode, right? We're almost at Twig 10, which was kind of a milestone for me. And today, we have a special guest.
That's true. So today, before we go to our guest and how we found our guest, let's talk a little bit more about the topics of the day. And that kind of sets up why we have a guest and who the guest is. Sounds so good. Jake, do you want to run through the topics?
Sure. So we're going to be talking about four articles today. The first is, forget Instagram, teen influencers are making thousands from online gaming. The second is about Activision Blizzard, where Activision Blizzard management talks esports, mobile partnerships, and more. The third is about Overwatch. Overwatch League expansion can bring in $480 million for Activision Blizzard. And the fourth is the future of esports in your pocket? Mobile gaming is already huge and getting bigger. And if you can't tell already, the theme running through all of these articles is essentially about esports and the growth of esports in the overall gaming market. So Mishka, a little bit more about our guest.
Yeah. So since we're both, are we white belts or blue belts? We're kind of in between the white and blue belt area.
I don't think I even have a belt. I'm not registered.
All right. So I think I've gone through the beginner's course, and we know a little bit about esports, a little bit about influencer marketing, a little bit about community, but we brought in somebody to teach us. And that somebody is Haney Vassander, CMO of Matchmade, and previously executive producer for Vainglory's esports. Haney, welcome.
Thank you very much. I feel very warm and fuzzy about this beautiful introduction. Thank you.
Haney, how do you want to do it? Do you want to run an introduction of yourself, or do you want to just jump into the topics and show your know-how?
I can spend like 10 seconds introducing myself.
Yeah, first of all, Talk about what Matchmade does.
Yeah, CMO of Matchmade, we're the leading influencer marketing platform for games. So we actually analyze and automate the process of finding the best influencers for your game and making sure that if you're a game studio and you want to grow your game through influencers, that you're working with people who actually match your target audience and make sense for you on a budgetary side as well. And it's all about data, measuring real time, getting these beautiful reports about how everything's going and so forth. Super fun, super exciting. And we have more news coming soon, but I can't say anything.
And from the studio perspective, I've used personally Matchmade in two different companies that I work with. And both of the times, like everything that you said is true, but most important for me personally has been always the quality of the traffic. So very, very good quality of traffic coming in from the influencer sources. And that's always a positive because it raises your KPIs. So that's the way I see it. Anyway, let's not talk about Matchmade anymore. JK, do you got anything on that?
No. And you had one more shout out, right, Mishka?
Yes. So again, just we want to give a shout out as always to the data partners that we have. So Sensor Tower for giving the quantitative data, and Game Refinery for providing the qualitative data for all of our, most of our analysis, not esports, but most of our game analysis. But without further ado, JK, which article are we jumping into?
Let's just jump into the first one about teen influencers.
Okay, so this was an interesting one. So forget Instagram, teen influencers are making thousands from online gaming. Now, this article ran on NBC, and I have to say that this article was a little bit of a hot mess. So essentially, it had just a millions of quotes. So I'm going to kind of run through the most important parts and come up with the questions that I have afterwards. So the article starts about, and I'm just going to quote, this influencer, Luke Fergie, dropped out of high school, and he had no idea what sort of a career he'd pursue. All he knew was that he really loved playing Rules of Survival. And at that moment when I was reading, it's like, dude, you need to start playing Fortnite. Anyway, then a relatively new online multiplayer battle game from NetEase Games. Anyway, forward to now, 6 months later, the Irish teen who goes by the username iFerg has more than 150,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel, and he has turned his hobby into a job making sponsored videos for developers looking to promote their content to his followers. And he's going on saying that he earns about $300 to $500 per integrated video. So this is probably a video where you get a shout out, and somewhere around $1,000 to $1,500 for a dedicated video. Now the article continues, and basically this article is, it doesn't even have a clear point, but I kind of came up with the question in the end. Anyway, it goes forward and talks about new Zoo reports, which predicts the esport industry being worth $905 million this year. And quoting Andrew Paradise, CEO and founder of Skillz, a mobile gaming platform, that the esports industry could be as much as $40 billion by 2025. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but I also wanted to give a benchmark. And I looked at the global cardboard box industry, which is $500 billion already in 2014. And it's just increasing through Amazons and everything. So even though esports is huge, the real money is in cardboard industry. But anyway, so I just want to give people perspective when you start talking about 40 billions. It's like cardboard is now probably 550 billion. Anyway, the article again jumps. This article is crazy. So thanks, JK, for finding it. So it jumps into an interview with Chris Hopper, head of North American esports at Riot Games. And he talks about why sort of a League of Legends is not really sharing the numbers. And he's kind of quoting that it's tough to contextualize within the broader gaming scope. But then he continues on saying that esports is great, especially League of Legends, because it's a video game that you can play in an aspirational way. In a way that he quotes, I quote him, "I watch the NFL and I enjoy it, but I can't throw a 50-yard pass. But with League of Legends, you can feasibly do these things the pros are doing. That's why it's successful as an esport game. And making updates to the game every week keeps it fresh for players." He also says that last year's championship had over 80 million live unique viewers in a single day. That's an astonishing number. Across a number of platforms, including Twitch and YouTube. So I'm going to end this with a couple of facts and a couple of questions, Haney. The facts are that the prize pools in esports are very variable and the endorsements are very risky. Games emerge quickly, like Fortnite, and they die fast, like DayZ. Investing in any market at this early stage is super high risk. There's possibly high reward. And that's the question mark. So my questions. Number one is, what does a game need to do to succeed in esports? And that's the question number one. And number two is it worth it? Like, what's the ROI of being part of esports? Like, this article. And anyway, I'm done.
Yeah, those are great questions. And I tried to read through the article myself as well. And it was very weird because it started as an influencer marketing article and turned into esports. Anyway, for the first question, what does a game need to succeed in esports? I think this is the holy grail of questions that people are going after right now, especially with all this hype about mobile esports. But to be honest, there's no secret sauce that you can do to build an esport. What you need to do is build a good game. And we all know that's very, very difficult. And for esports specifically, I think there's a few more things that come into play. It needs to be skill-based and difficult enough, right? Because I love Candy Crush, great game. I can spend hours on it. But in the end, there's not that much skill involved. Maybe somebody could correct me if I'm wrong on this one. There has to be that like skill shot. You need to be able to strategize. You need to be able to, make mistakes, but then again, be able to come back from those mistakes, right? So it has to be complicated enough and skill-based. Anyway, I think a good esport is team-based just because it builds a lot better of a narrative, of a dynamic. Because in the end, what makes a sport is that you start to have an emotional connection with a team or a player. You know, like, why would you care about random dudes playing a video game? But in the minute you start to kind of get emotionally attached to what logo's on their t-shirt or what's their story, you get involved, you want to watch. And through that, you probably want to get better at the game as well. So you aspire, you know, you're inspired by these people. And to me, team games, there's just so much more dynamic. There's just so much more that goes outside of the game as well, because we all know building a good team and keeping it successful and dealing with the pressure of competing in a game, like that whole psychology, when it's in a team, it's just a lot more interesting. And then to become an esport, you don't have to have a large player base off the bat, but you have to have a game that's not only skill-based and team-based, but it's also accessible and playable by a large number of people. Looking at different statistics and metrics that there's out there, about 30% of esports viewers don't play the game that they watch. That's only 30%. That means that 70% actually watch the game. So it means that you have to have a large enough player base that people will watch it so that you can build a sport around it, you can get sponsors involved in production and have budget and so forth. To do that, I mean, it has, even though it's difficult, it still has to be accessible enough. And that's why I think League is such a good example, because it's free, right? It's everything you spend is cosmetic, and it's skins and so forth. So you don't have to spend money in the game to be good. Anyway, it also has to be watchable. It has to be pretty and nice. Why would you want to watch something for hours if it's not, you know, if it doesn't look appealing to the eye? Of course, it doesn't have to, not everything has to be AAA and beautiful camera shots here and there, but still, like, we're used to seeing very high quality entertainment. We want to see those camera angles. We want to see pretty art. And then when it comes to the game side, one thing that, like, specifically to lift, like, yes, the game has to be good and there's a million things that go into it, but one thing that I kind of think is important is that there's not the super strong snowball effect. Because if it's team v team, the other team does a massive mistake, do they have a possibility to still have comeback? Because if there's not that possibility, you're essentially in a snowball situation. So if there's one mistake, you know who's going to win. That's not interesting. You don't want to watch that. It's like when you're watching a good UFC fight, right? Like, all right, the dude was almost knocked out, but still can come back, right?
Everybody likes a good beatdown.
No, they don't. Come on. So those are kind of a few things. Then to your second question, is it worth it? What's the ROI? That's a great question. I think there's this ongoing debate within esports of, is it marketing? What is it? For me, I don't think esport works as a marketing tool to acquire new players. It works as a phenomena. It works as building PR, as working PR, as, you know, building something larger than life. There's some companies that do very smart tracking with when games are being played. How does that correlate with purchases in game? And you have to tie in the esport within the product. And you can do some very good ROI if you build it smartly. I don't think a lot of companies do, however. If I were thinking about building an esport and money would be my number one objective, I would say no. I wouldn't start doing esports to make money out of it. If I want to do esports to build something mm-hmm. new and big and interesting and get viewership and, you know, build this phenomena thing, cool. That's great. But right now,
okay. JK,
sorry, that was a long monologue.
JK, I'm going to summarize and you'll jump in. So my summary here that I was listening to you. So in order to be a successful, or in order to build an esports, you have to be a skill-based game. You have mm-hmm. to be accessible. You have to be watchable. Okay. You have to make sure that,
Sorry, Mishka, I think the internet's cutting out a little bit.
So I'll reiterate. So in order to build an esports game, you have to have a skill-based game, an accessible game, a watchable, good balancing. So anti-snowballing, mm-hmm. meaning that if in the midst of the game, one team is losing, there's a balancing that allows the rubber banding, in the sense that allows the other team that is losing to come back from behind. And this creates what any game needs to, or any sports needs to have, is that thrill of winning and the agony of defeat. And then finally, you said team-based as well as story-driven, meaning the story around the people playing the game. And that's where the team kind of comes in. That's where the individual. So those were my notes, JK. We lost JK.
JK, ¿dónde estás?
I'm hearing like every other word, unfortunately, but hopefully the internet clears up a little bit.
Yeah, so I just basically reiterated what Haney said, but let's just jump in forward, and let's hope the internet on your end keeps on giving. So do you have anything, to add to this or any other questions? So basically,
I have got two questions for Haney. So, to your point earlier, the article first seemed to focus on like teen influencers and then jump to the overall esports market. You know, it was pretty interesting to see just how big they think the esports market is going to get. So maybe a question on both of those issues. The first, so Haney, from the perspective of trying to become a teen influencer, and if you look at, you know, you're working with influencers today, what do you think it takes for those teen influencers to be successful? And the second question I have is about the business model. So, you know, it seems like there's two different types of models with respect to like how esports works with the different games, either franchise or non-franchise. Could you, you know, for some of us who don't know, could you talk about both of those models?
Sure. I'm going to answer your influencer question first. So for a teenager to become an influencer, I think that's also one of the holy grails right now. But to be honest, I think a lot of us older folks, we look at these influencers and we're like, wait, what? These are just kids making videos and they're getting all of these viewerships and sponsorships and money doing exactly what? But actually what goes into it is a lot of dedication, a lot of hard work. It's a lot of thinking about how do you stand out from others and how do you still stay true to your audience? So becoming a teenage influencer isn't all that simple, but so trying to simplify it is find your own niche, do something that's not, you know, copyable by everyone else. Be consistent. So, you know, making videos regularly or streaming regularly, being kind of predictable in that regard, being very professional, I think, because a lot of these kids are young. So what they struggle with is, you know, sometimes if things are agreed on with a company and you have a sponsorship, you have to deliver on mm-hmm. the deadline. It doesn't matter if you're tired, but you have to deliver. So I think that's one key component, is like that professionalism. And then just, you know, having the patience to build it out slowly. One of my favorite channels right now is this two, I don't know how old they are, maybe 15, Lucas and Marcus, twin brothers that do all these silly pranks on YouTube. And they're really funny. They bring in their parents and sisters for all this funny stuff. And the thing is, like, they do it, they do those videos regularly, often. There's always something funny. There's always a punchline. They do it kind of as themselves, but still in a very professional manner. So that's essentially like building your own YouTube channel, is like building your own media empire, so taking it seriously. Okay, enough of that. So the franchise model. So to be honest, my background is more in the production side, and not so much in thinking about everything that goes into the financial models. But if you look at the franchise revenue breakdown, what it comes down to essentially that you pay a sum of X and you're in a league and you can't be kicked out. So essentially, that's the big value right there is that you know that you will be in a league with certain viewers and you're there, right? Which helps for then building your shared revenues, the league shared revenues, which are sponsorships, media deals, merchandise. Then on top of this, the teams can do specific revenue deals like more sponsorships and peripherals and apparel and so forth. And then, you know, with the franchise, it also comes down to the regional and city revenues, getting a share of the ticket and merchandising within the home market. So there's a lot of advantages that goes into it. Like I said, you can't drop out. There's shared revenues. So there's a higher floor, and you're all in it together. Essentially building it out together is better for everyone. There's more to win. You also have your home market to protect. And you do have that fan base built in through your kind of locational ties. So, for example, with Fnatic, they're based out of London, so they have a huge following over there, and they've built a very strong home base and a bunker where they host all these events and stuff, right? So you start to build that kind of country versus country, city versus city feel as well. Then in the non-franchising model, it's different because there's no upfront payment like that, but you compete to be part in a league, but there's the risk that you can fall out. But then there's all, you know, then there's the sponsorship sides. Essentially, it's kind of the revenue streams are similar. There's the sponsorships, there's the apparel and equipment, there's the media licensing deals. Typically, there's higher prize pools. The advantage is that it's more adaptable and flexible for new games especially. And then non-franchise brands can be in multiple titles. But to be honest, like franchise and non-franchise teams, there's very little exclusivity in this regard. And there's, you know, there's more options. For me, what it comes down to is what's the best way to build a long-standing sport. I think the franchise model can't be brought in too early because for a team to put in, say, $20 million to be part of a sport, you kind of need to know that the viewers will be there. You need to know that you'll get that money back and then some. And if that were a new esport that isn't yet established, that's super risky, right? So the non-franchise model, I think, works when it's new titles that you don't know how they'll do. I had another thought, but now I'm losing it. Hold on. It's late in the evening. anyway, maybe that's enough.
We have two more articles to come. Actually, three or more articles. I'm talking. So you guys are shooting hard on the first one.
Yeah.
Going hard on the paint.
Oh, but then like what's more entertaining, right? Like, so for the viewers, I don't know. I don't have the crystal ball here, but is it more interesting to watch the same teams compete and not be able, you know, they won't drop out. There's no relegation. Do you want to watch those teams and see how they do? It's kind of consistent. You have 12 teams and you can, you know, like within that frame, who's going to be the best? Or is it more interesting when, you know, even if they're Fnatic, but they don't play well, they can fall out. Is that more entertainment?
Relegate.
Yeah. So I don't know. Did you have any additional thinking for that?
I don't. But
yeah, you. I think you bombarded us to the next question.
Sorry.
Next article.
Sorry.
Right, can we go to the second article?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Okay. So the second article is Activision Blizzard management talks esports, mobile partnerships, and more. And basically, this is an article that talks about Activision Blizzard had an earnings call, their second quarter earnings call, and just some highlights from that call. But we'll focus a little bit more on the esports related issues that came out from that call. So three points from the call. First is that the senior leadership team explained sort of the most important aspects of its growth strategy. And really, they talk about two key competitive advantages, which is valuable content and wide-scale distribution. And there's a pretty good quote from CEO Robert Kotick. I think he goes by Bobby Kotick. But basically, he said, virtually all of our content is based on intellectual property we own and created by our wholly owned studios in the US, Canada, Europe, and Asia, and staffed by the most talented programmers, designers, artists, and animators in the world. We are in a privileged position. We have a direct digital connection with our customers. We are a creator of premium content, and we have multiple monetization models at scale. So in other words, I think what he's alluding to is basically the fact that Activision has been able to create incredibly valuable IP. And once you have that IP, you can monetize it all over the place, like console, PC, mobile, comics, t-shirts, books, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's what they're saying is, you know, the key to their competitive advantage is building these very, you know, very good IP and then being able to monetize it. The second point they talked about is how well they're doing in esports. And so Activision Blizzard partnered with 12 team owners for the first season of its Overwatch esports league. And it also signed media rights deals with streaming broadcast leaders like Amazon and Disney. And it also held its championship event at Barclays Center, which sold out and was watched on TV and online by millions of viewers worldwide. And on top of that, the Overwatch League is on pace to generate nearly $1 billion in revenue for the company. So this kind of woke me up, you know, not only the numbers from the past article, but just understanding how much revenue can accrue to the publisher for esports in a game. And finally, the other point I wanted to take away from the earnings call is the fact that they're pointing to a massive opportunity in mobile, which is good news for us in the mobile gaming industry. But I'll just read another quote from Bobby Kotick. While esports give our existing fans a new and everlasting way to celebrate their favorite games and expand the appeal to broader audiences, our mobile initiatives will expand our access to our iconic franchises by making them available to hundreds of millions of new players around the world. We have multiple mobile initiatives underway, including some with partners with strong mobile experience and local market knowledge. So sounds like, you know, Activision Blizzard will be really investing a lot more heavily into mobile with new games. And they also mentioned how well King is doing, 270 million active users compared to like 45 million and 37 million for console and PC. So just kind of describing like the reach and the breadth of access to users via mobile. And then also they mentioned partnering with Tencent for a Call of Duty game in China. So a couple of takeaways from this is that one, you know, they seem to be doing well in terms of owning and creating IP, which is super valuable. And once you create that valuable IP, it's highly monetizable. And again, esports is definitely generating a lot more revenue than I had originally thought. Just a question to Haney, like how big does this get? And is this what Activision is doing with Overwatch? Is that typical? Are other publishers of popular games going to be able to generate as much money as Activision Blizzard? Can you talk to me about like, you know, how much money you think publishers are going to be able to generate from esports?
to be honest, no, I can't predict that.
Okay.
I don't think.
Well, do you think Overwatch is more of an outlier, Or do you think there'll be other games that can, you know, generate as much money for the publisher? Like, you know, maybe other popular games, whether it's Fortnite or you know, other games.
The way I see it, mm-hmm. esports right now, there's very few games that are actually big. You have Overwatch, you have CS, you have League, you have Dota 2. Like, it's
Fortnite.
And Fortnite, yeah, of course. But you have, like, you have a few big titles that are doing very well in esports, and it looks like a very lucrative market, and in many ways it is. But then again, like, it's the same thing with creating a successful mobile title. Like, it's very difficult and it's very hard. I can't predict any numbers on if it's 1 billion, 2 billion, or 3 billion that you can make in it. Of course, it's possible when everything goes well and you have a good title that's competitive, that people want to watch, and you own the IP, you probably own some of the distribution channels, and you can actually produce at scale. But just from my experience, like, building an esport, it's not very easy and it's not very simple. And for new titles, like I said, I don't think esports is the best way to think about growing your game. When you have a game that's doing well and people want to play competitively, esports can become massive. And especially if we look at where the kind of viewership of sports is going overall, esports is the future. That's what the younger people want to watch. But I'm not going to give you a number. No way. Right.
So let me give you a number.
Okay, you give me a number.
I'll give you exact number. So, and that number comes in from the third article that JK put
here. Yes.
And that article literally says, it's from Motley Fool as the one before, Overwatch League expansion could bring $400 million for Activision Blizzard. And the article basically goes through, and I'm going to quote, Activision Blizzard is going to be cashing some large checks in the third quarter after announcing six more expansion teams for Overwatch League. In 2019, the league will grow from 12 teams to 20 teams and will include franchises as Chengdu and Hangzhou in, I can't pronounce that, in China, Paris, Toronto, Vancouver in Canada, and Washington. The expansion could prove to be potential for esports as an international business. For Activision Blizzard, it isn't bad for the balance sheet either. Activision Blizzard expected to charge $30 million to $60 million per new Overwatch League franchise, depending on the location. This money will go directly into Activision Blizzard's coffers, which differs from revenue that franchises might share, like tickets and advertising. So essentially this article is saying that in order to jump into Overwatch League, it costs you between $30 to $60 million. I think this number is up. If I'm correct, it used to be 20 before, but apparently the price tag is like three times higher right now. Just jump in. So I'm kind of wondering, like, where does that 1 billion number comes from? And I think it comes from things like Twitch, which signed a $90 million two-year deal to be exclusive streaming home for the league last year. So probably
sponsorships.
Yeah. But isn't the sponsorship something that the franchises can keep? Because aren't the tickets and sponsorship revenue going to the franchises, while the Overwatch League is just the one you kind of pay to attend and they get the TV rights as well as they distribute the TV money? How does it work?
I'm not sure. I don't know the details on how the Overwatch franchise works, to be honest.
But in a normal, like, JK, do you know how it works in a normal, like, let's say NFL?
I think it's based on the NFL model, so they should be similar. But yeah, I mean, my understanding is just as basic as what you were talking about, that you pay that franchise fee to get a team in the league. There's a limited number of seats. And then I believe just based on Haney's comments before that, you know, there would be a set of league shared revenues as far as like sponsorships and stuff like that. And then I think Ticketing, I don't know if that goes to, like, if that's wholly owned by the team or if that's also sort of league shared as well.
Yeah, it kind of has to be league shared because then the team would have to own the stadium where the game is played. Like, yeah. If this team's arranged that. So in this case, it would be probably some kind of, you know, again, they divide the other profits from both the streaming rights, TV rights, and the ticket rights between the franchisees. But the franchisers can actually have the revenue from sponsorship. Like if they're sponsored by, you know, 76ers or any, like, Paris Saint-Germain has now a team. Like all these big real sports franchises have now real esports teams. So anyway, this is the number. And my kind of question was, you know, I have two questions. So number one is, if you have to monetize esports, is franchise model to go with? Because, you know, essentially you're asking for money for others to attend. And the number two is, you know, you kind of answered this multiple times, but it's, should companies look to monetize esports or rather look for esports to drive growth?
It depends on the game and it depends on the phase that the game is in. I think clearly franchise is a great model and it's lucrative for not only the league, but it's also lucrative for the teams. And in the end, to build a sport, you need to build the ecosystem and not only your own, you know, grow the depth of your own pockets. So I do think that it makes sense. But like said, from day one, it doesn't work. Like, you have to figure out how do you build an esport that doesn't, like, to be honest, like the first 2-3 years, you're investing a lot of money out of pocket, and hopefully, you know, you start to see the dividends year four or so forth. And then at that point, if you have the viewership, if you have that player base that wants to attend and wants to watch this event, then the franchise model does make sense. But in the beginning, in my opinion, so put it this way, I think one of the mistakes that a lot of games do when they start to build an esport is that they go too heavy, too hard. You need to start building it kind of patiently with the community through softer tournaments, building that interest to have those kind of narratives that come out of the player community that then feed into the actual official sport. And when you start slapping like 100 million, you know, year one of your esport, I think that's, you're investing too much too fast and just the player base isn't ready for that, nor is the title, because you need to test it out. Like, you learn so much just from those smaller tournaments. I kind of forgot your question by now.
And the question one was, is the franchise model? So question one was, is the franchise model the way to monetize esports? And the question number two was, you know, should you look for esports as monetization or as growth? And you kind of answered that before. Yeah. You said, look for it as a growth channel, and when it grows, start monetizing. So it's so it's essentially the free-to-play model of get, keep, monetize.
Okay.
So esports function as free-to-play. Got it.
But if your game has potential for an esport, there's so much hype right now, and there's so much money around esports right now. Everyone's looking for the next thing. So if your game really is esports capable, I think you're in a good place.
JK, what do you got?
Yeah, I would say that the one other question I have is just more strategically, like, you know, depending on the game and the, you know, if we look at the value chain, like, who's going to be driving the most money from esports? Is it the publisher or you know, or the teams? And if I'm looking at the Activision model, it sounds like Activision is going to be making most of the money.
It's publishers and it's production companies.
Yeah,
they always come out in the winning end on this.
Right, and then I guess there's also the streamers as well in that mix, whether it's Twitch or so there's also sort of the distribution platform as well in that mix. And
right.
Like, how well do they do? I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. But yeah, at least currently, if I'm just looking at Overwatch, it seems like you know, most of the power is held by the publisher.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. All right. So why don't we wrap this up with the last article? This last article is basically, is the future of esports in your pocket? Mobile gaming is already huge and getting bigger. So just to break down the article very quickly, according to Newzoo, mobile game spending is projected to rise more than 25% this year and represents the majority of all game spending. So $70 billion in a $138 billion market. Clash Royale launched its league last month in August, and Vainglory just launched a league of its own this month, the Vainglory Premier League. So both mobile game titles launching their own esports leagues. Just to the point that you were talking about earlier, Haney, while most, you know, esports leagues have sort of cashed in by selling broadcast rights and things like that, the Clash Royale League is actually not seeking either. So they're kind of viewing it to your point as more of a marketing cost. And there's a quote from Tim Ebner, the head of esports for Supercell, and he states, for Clash Royale, sports is fundamentally engagement marketing, and we are not looking to monetize it directly. And then this article talks about kind of the pro argument and then the con argument for why mobile will be or potentially could be a big esports market as well. And so just in terms of like the overall units shipped, they state in IDC research that shows that there will be 1.646 billion units of smartphones shipped in 2022, up from 1.465 billion in 2017. And comparing that to the sort of 82.2 million PlayStation 4 units and 29.4 million sort of Xbox units in 2017. And the con to this, or the reason why mobile may not become a huge sort of esports market, they spoke to a guy by the name of Michael Pachter at Wedbush Securities, who cites that the screen size and control scheme are limiting factors. And then he states, I don't think mobile ever becomes a big deal. If you can watch a movie in IMAX or on your phone, which one are you going to do? The best experience is always going to be on a large screen, according to Pachter. And then the article ends with some statistics around Clash Royale's YouTube channel having over 600 million views, and the fact that for Clash Royale's tournament, there were over 25 million players from 113 different countries. So the big question here is, so we've had a number of discussions about esports, and certainly from a console and PC perspective, it's gotten pretty big. I don't think anyone will really doubts that that's going to be a big market with all the numbers being thrown around. But what about mobile? And so Haney, maybe could you speak to, and it's certainly great that you've worked at Vainglory and they've just launched their league, but what do you think in terms of mobile becoming massive in esports?
Yeah, so I actually get asked this question a lot. And for me, what it comes down to, I haven't seen all the stars align yet in a mobile esport. I don't think we've seen the right title with the right tech that's skill-based enough that solved for things like latency problems and reliability, that has a large enough player base, is viewable, and has a format that people want to watch. So with Vainglory, I think we did many things right, but I think there's one of the big mistakes is that we went very strong in the existing kind of how esports are broadcast, which is long, long live streams. So I think, for example, that's one thing, like figuring out what do mobile esports look like? Because, I mean, somebody might punch me in the face for this, but mobile games are more casual than PC and console. So why shouldn't mobile esports be more casual by nature as well? And thus, in my opinion, more accessible and more mainstream. So I don't think there's anything preventing mobile esports becoming big and becoming bigger than traditional mobile esports. We just haven't seen the right mix of everything come together yet. And when we talk about mobile esports, there's a distinction to be made between West and the East. If you look at the East, mobile esports isn't the future. It's happening right now. Arena of Valor, the version over there, King of Glory, their viewership is massive. And according to Newzoo, 24% of the esports revenue in China is from mobile esports. The King of Glory tournament had like 14 million peak viewers in China. So it's already happening. But the West... Right. is happening differently. And I don't think the mobile MOBA is what's going to make esports explode on MOBA. Maybe it's Clash Royale. Maybe it's Candy Crush. The hell I know. I disagree with Mr. Pachter because, for example, if you use the argument the best experience is always going to be on a large screen, half of Twitch viewership is on mobile. Half of YouTube viewership is on mobile. Yes, my YouTube video would look bigger on my TV, but that's not what I have in my pocket or in the bathroom.
Right.
Can I drop?
Yeah. So
yes, you
go ahead.
Okay. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about Clash Royale esports, mm-hmm. and that's the thing. So. I don't hate Clash Royale. I actually love this is my favorite game.
We know that.
Yeah.
That you delete but and reinstall.
It's again installed and I'm yes. I'm god damn it, I'm deep in this. Like
I
have an addiction. I need to uninstall it again. I gave myself till Friday. Somebody said check out the new trading system and I was gone.
Anyway, throw us the numbers.
Anyway, so I have to throw some shade on their esports tournament. So after this big launch and you know, Clash Royale channel on YouTube has close to, I believe, 6 million subscribers. So they launched this new channel called Clash Royale Esports. There's 127,000 subscribers. The latest video, and we are having Team Dignitas playing, what's that? That looks like Team Liquid, that logo. Liquid, yeah. The horse? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Liquid. See, I know stuff. Anyway, so Dignitas playing Liquid and so forth. We have awesome matches. 34,000 views, 9,400 views, 4,300 views, 22,000 views, 61. And then you go back to Clash Royale channel. There's a goddamn Clash-O-Rama comic, which is, you know, nothing related to the game. That's a 1 million view. There's an update with the latest one where their 3D artist is going through the basics of 3D art character creations. You know, everything from baking and sculpting and texturing and rigging and animating. Just to like, a run through how to make a 3D character. I think that got close to 2 million views. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, these esport teams and their finals and their top five games and whatever are getting like 20,000 views. Mm-hmm. Just saying. These are just numbers. I still love the game, but yeah, these are just the numbers.
I think there's a conversation to be had about how much do these established well-known esports teams, how much do their viewers migrate between games? So Team Liquid is Dota 2 based. How many of, you know, like, and like, all right, they have a huge fan base, they're great in that, but then again, will those fans watch Clash Royale? They also have other titles like Counter-Strike and so forth, but anyway, like, do their fans go to other games, or does it matter if they have that logo on their shirt versus they would just build from scratch? So for, you know, comparing to like, there's this famous YouTuber called Alvaro 845, and he has Team Queso, which is mobile esport. They competed in Vainglory, but they also compete in Clash Royale. I would love to actually see how their viewership is doing, because he's grown kind of organically from the mobile gaming scene. So is it kind of that mobile esports is still in its infancy and having all these big brands, does it work or doesn't it? I haven't seen any research. I don't know. I'm just asking a question.
Yeah, you're basically saying that does it make sense to have these massive esports franchises to be a part of it? It's like, what is the audience you're talking to? Because your game is super accessible, and players who play Clash Royale, like myself, mm-hmm. you know, I happen to know Team Liquid and Team Solo Mid and you know,
it's Cloud. TSM. Nobody calls it.
I love saying Solo Mid. I know you do, but I love saying it. It sounds so nerdy.
TSM. Anyway. Okay.
Anyway. So, do not correct when it's Team Solo Mid.
Sounds like a steak when you say it.
Yeah, it's like I want my team solo in the mid.
God.
It's so mobile.
JK, help.
Anyway, so does it make sense? Because when we look at their previous one, like even the esports announcement trailer mm-hmm. got 21 million views. But it's not like people don't care about Clash mm-hmm. Royale. It's declining. Mm-hmm. It's just, it seems like they don't really care about this type of content. Their first game got like close to half a million views when they kicked off the esports. And then all the latest one, the star-studded action, as they presented, star-studded action. I love it. They don't really get that many views.
No. But to be honest, you're not that deep into this season yet. There's still region versus region. We're not in the finals. You know, like, it's still early days.
I know. Based on the metrics, I would only do videos on texturing and modeling and baking.
is viewership, is that your KPI? Or what's your KPI?
Yeah, that would be my KPI. The viewership, KPI. If you want a growth pattern, I would do everything. I would have next the community manager talk about answering to tickets and... that would be like 2 million views. Anyway, JK, you jump in.
Yeah, I guess the last question I would have is then what, so if a mobile game will get big in terms of esports, what is it going to take? Is it higher skill cap? Is it, you know, something that's a lot more Twitch action based? Is it something where there's a lot of crazy stuff happening on the screen? You know, there's a lot of people that watch these golf trick shots or pool trick shots because it's just like really sort of, you know, exciting and weird stuff happens. Or is it just like, you know, being able to see team-based stuff and that's hard to do in mobile? Like, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or predictions in terms of any specific type of game that could potentially sort of break through.
I think it's going to be something new. I think it's going to be one of those genre-defining games that just comes out and it just makes sense. And I don't know what it is yet. Like, I'm not a game designer, but I'm very much looking forward to it. I just don't think the content's there. And then when you're building a mobile esport, you do have some more technical requirements. So for example, to have a not tour-based live team versus team multiplayer action, like it requires a different kind of tech setup. And then for an esport, having worked on this myself, like figuring out how do you make Wi-Fi work in this live setup because you're on mobile. So anyway, there's that kind of things. But I think right now the content, the game isn't there. I was very much in the hopes that Vainglory would have been the mobile esport title to really become massive. But I think that went too heavy into the core, right? Maybe Clash Royale is too heavy in the casual. Maybe it's not interesting enough as an esport. Maybe it isn't skill-based enough. I don't know. But I just don't think we've seen the game yet. Maybe it's Candy Crush. Candy Crush Esports. I'm just waiting for it. I'm joking. I'm a little bit serious just because I like Candy Crush.
I know.
Just that stage design would be so cool, and having these massive jelly beans.
Would that stage design be sweet?
It would be sweet. I'm sorry.
All right, I think we've covered all the topics and more.
All right.
This was a cool 52 minutes of podcast. So again. If,
I think my answers were rubbish, except in the end. So you just delete me out.
No. So here's what we're gonna do. At what's your Twitter handle?
Haney Dare.
At Haney Dare. HEINDER. Mm-hmm. Ask her more questions, and we might have her back on the podcast or not, depending on the feedback. We're very analytical here, very data driven.
Yes, you are very data driven.
So. Hit us up, you know, on Twitter, as well as, you know, Deconstructor of Fun, and LinkedIn and all the channels, Facebook. We're everywhere. We're literally in every podcast channel, every social media channel except Snapchat. We do not mess around with Snapchat. We're too old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if JK has a Snapchat.
Do you? No Snapchat for me. Yep.
You have?
I it's the Instagram.
Okay, JK lives in LA. Yeah, he can does. Have Snapchat.
He's basically the neighbor of Snapchat.
Yeah. Right? Anyway, let's cut it. Let's cut it. This is it. Thank you very much. This was a highly
What's
interesting...
your hashtag? Hashtag deconstructor of fun?
Hashtag, I don't know.
DOF?
I don't do hashtags. Anyway, thank you. We're done. We're done. This is done. We'll get back
Bye,
next
everyone.
Week. Shoot us up for ideas as well as guests. We have plenty of guests that want to come in, but you were the first one. So thank you very much, Haney,
for
joining this
me.
Off
thank
the
you.
Sofa Thanks, and coming in. JK?
Yeah.
All right. We're done. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.